Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about PayPal's new e-commerce offering for small businesses, Venmo becomes a source of funds when you're in a crunch, a new batch of apps to help you manage your kids' allowances and teach them to manage their money, and of course, a story on a cryptocurrency. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get going. With me this week is Steve.
Hello, John. How are you?
Great, great. Glad you're here. And Monica will be back with us next week.
She's on assignment in beautiful Italy.
Yeah, tough life. Tough life.
Tough life indeed.
For the FinTech crowd. All right, well, let's get started with PayPal. You know, everyone knows them as a personal kind of a payment app and a formerly part of eBay. But they also offer e-commerce services for big companies like Instagram and Facebook. They offer services like onboarding. They use AI and machine learning for fraud detection, compliance, all of these services you need to properly run and avoid big losses, actually, when you have an e-commerce site. So this has been available for the big guys, but what about the small businesses? People like startups and or you and me that want to get going and offer things online.
Maybe we can use PayPal to power our FinTech Newscast merch store online.
Well, yeah, that's right. Please feel free to donate whenever you want. So PayPal is now opening up this offering, their e-commerce offering, to small businesses to do exactly that.
So I saw this, and it sounds like it's just a clone of Stripe. How is this different from Stripe?
I don't know that it is different from Stripe, as far as I can tell. Yeah, is Stripe the leader in the e-commerce for small businesses?
I believe in the U.S. they are. Them and maybe Adyen in Europe.
But Adyen, right.
Yeah, it's mostly Stripe.
So they have some competition already, but still, a lot of demand for this kind of product. And we always talk about the small and medium-sized businesses being underserved. And you can see that because of strong uptake when there are offerings for that market. So it is a little bit of trouble to do this. You think it's pretty straightforward to just offer some payments online, just like you do. You swipe the square kind of a thing attached to your phone, but it's much more complicated than that and can open you up to big losses, which does happen frequently when you don't have these kinds of protections on your e-commerce site.
And fraud as well. I know that one of the things that Stripe recently released is a chargeback solution, because apparently it's there are high volumes of chargebacks for e-commerce transactions for CNP purchases, card not present stuff. So I think that, you know, Stripe's, or rather PayPal's, offerings really get into the pain points that a lot of SMEs feel, especially in the online world.
Yeah, that's one thing they mentioned in this article out of CNBC, which the link will be in our show notes, that disputes management and account management are two of the features that they offer. And again, some of those things that you may not think about as a consumer, but if you're on the e-commerce side, you have to manage these things, or you're open to these significant losses. And as we know, PayPal is a large player in the payment space. They have 22 million merchants using their mobile payment services right now. And they say they have 277 million overall users of their services.
That's pretty fascinating. I saw a chart recently, actually this morning through work, that showed the growth of PayPal compared to Venmo and Square's Cash App. And PayPal has just lagged significantly behind both Venmo, which is their own product, as well as the Cash App. It showed the demographics, and PayPal's users, at least of the mobile sort of traditional P2P app, are much older than those of Venmo and Square.
Yeah, I did see something like this recently, and maybe it's related to this. It was on a CNBC video, actually, that was talking about that demographic difference. PayPal is more like working folk, older, just want to get their job done. And then Venmo is like a younger demographic, coastal.
It's the selfie Instagram people doing that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. So, I myself am not very selfie friendly.
Yeah.
If you've seen me or my photo.
I prefer to not see my own reflection anywhere, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. Much like a vampire. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep.
All right. So good luck if you're a small business out there, another offering for you, and we're glad to see that. But it's not the only way that you can get help.
It is not, no. In very related news, there is a really fascinating and heartbreaking article in the LA Times this week detailing how many users across the U.S. are relying on Venmo to kind of crowdsource funds for any emergencies or unforeseen big expenses. So the article goes into the story of this woman in LA, I think, whose father was arrested. She couldn't get to where she needed to go, and she just put up on a tweet, "Hey, this is my
Yeah, they needed like the gas money even to go visit him.
Exactly.
Just a very basic expense.
Very, very dire circumstances. But she basically put out a tweet, which was, you know, "Here's my Venmo username. I need some cash. Please give me some money." And, you know, people, of course, saw this, retweeted it, and ended up giving her more than she needed. But I think that it's kind of an interesting use case for this tool.
If you don't have enough money for gas, I'm sure she could have used that, whatever that a little bit of extra turned out to be.
She probably did, yeah. I'm assuming she's not going to blow that on unnecessary stuff. But it's an interesting use of these services, because, of course, you can be somewhat anonymous. Just put up your username or your account number on there, and people can just send you money. So there's no risk of any sort of fraud of money either going into or leaving your account.
Like the delivery back and forth kind
the
of thing.
The delivery,
fraud
right.
Fraud in that respect. So kind of like a mini Kickstarter for personal things?
It's basically that, yeah.
It's effectively being used that way.
It's effectively like an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter for personal expenses, which I think it speaks to, one, how great the technology is to enable this. You know, I don't have to know, I can just send you money. But two, kind of the failure of our system to help others who may be in need to actually cover these unforeseen expenses.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you put these new technology and solutions out there that they get used for, you know, new and interesting things. And hopefully in this case, you know, something that's really helping people. You know, the more cynical people out there, I'm sure you're thinking this, is what if someone just says they need money and they really...
And they don't,
They don't.
Well, then I guess you're just...
They got to make their Mercedes payment.
Or, sure.
I mean, well, yeah. So just near criminal. Because it is strangers. It's not just soliciting friends. It's putting like a tweet, or I guess you could do it on Facebook or anywhere.
You can do it anywhere, yeah. You can do it anywhere. Yeah, just say, "Hey, this is my Venmo. Please send me some cash. I'm in dire need."
Yeah, where is the one that I saw where there was a fraud a case? What's that app where you crowdsource money like this? GoFundMe?
There's a couple of whenever
yeah,
there's
GoFundMe. That was the one.
GoFundMe. Yeah, whenever there's a tragedy like the Boston bombing a couple years ago, people set up GoFundMe for, quote unquote, the victims.
And or they do it for anything.
For
right?
anything.
Like
for
I'm going to get evicted from my apartment, or you set up a GoFundMe. So
right.
Now it's you can do even smaller amounts, like this gas example.
I just need gas money. Give me 40
on
bucks.
Your Venmo, yeah. You're doing a tiny fundraise.
The only concern to go back to the Boston thing here is that in the case of the GoFundMe for the, quote unquote, Boston victims, it was all a fraud. So it was just somebody who pocketed the money after the act of terrorism during the
Yikes.
Marathon.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Not ideal. So the article also had a really, really funny tweet that I thought was really, really quite illuminating about the financial status of our younger citizens. And it said, "Millennial culture is just passing around the same $20 to whoever needs it at the time, all the time."
Yeah, I thought that
forever.
Was funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's just, you need it now, I'm going to need it tomorrow.
Yeah, it's interesting to see these new uses. That's one of the things I love about following technology and finance, is that, you know, you put tools out there, you put new capabilities, and they get used in very new and interesting ways.
They do indeed.
All right. So one of the new and interesting ways you might not want to see money getting spent is when you give your kids an allowance. So there's a new batch of apps out there. There's a great article in the Wall Street Journal, which, you know, The Wall Street Journal, when they do cover fintech, they do a pretty good job, actually.
They do.
I wish they had a little bit more, but they're very interesting. And this article in the Wall Street Journal has a list of apps that are used to manage savings and allowances for your kids. So not just spending money, but saving money as well. And they give examples like a 16-year-old who's trying to save money for car insurance for a car that she's going to get soon, and other things that kids want to save up for. And they see the consequence. I love this aspect of some of the apps that they mention, is that you see the savings go down when you spend the money. So there's the sense of responsibility, of the pain that you can't double spend money, you know?
I have to say, this is a great way to teach younger kids financial literacy, which is something that we don't teach in schools anymore, or ever, I think. But I think I love all these apps. Maybe like 4 months ago, so we had the co-founder of GoHenry on the show. And I think there's a number of apps or products doing a very similar thing.
Yeah, and this is a big upgrade from what people used to do, and I guess they still do. They had like a chore wheel or a chore calendar.
That's what we use. We have a chore chart.
You have that?
We do. Yeah, for my kids. Yeah, finish your food, do your homework, be nice, say please and thank you, and then you get a whopping $2 a week.
Great. Yeah. Responsibility. Great.
Responsibility. Yeah. The only thing is that she ends up spending the money one bang. Like I want to go to Target and buy a Beyblade. And so there's no, she's too young for the app-enabled thing, but it's hard to teach her.
Okay, so a little young for that.
Yeah.
I think that they do have some minimum age that they recommend for a lot of these apps.
This is something that I've looked into. I know that for Bank of America, there's no age floor for you to have an account. So you could be 2 years old and have a debit card linked to your dad's or mom's account. For other banks, you have to be 13 or over. So there's kind of a different approach.
So it depends on the bank.
It depends on the bank, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I also like that for a lot of these apps, they have a lot of really interesting card controls so that you can, for example, say, no, Timmy, you will not spend your allowance money at GameStop. You're going to go to Barnes & Noble. I don't know where you go to Barnes & Noble, right?
If you can find a Barnes & Noble.
If you can find one, yeah. If you can find a Borders, go to Borders. But you can blacklist and or whitelist some merchants from the app as well. So you can say, you cannot buy stuff from iTunes, but you can go to the bookstore or, whatever good behavior you want to spur.
Huh. They do have candy at some bookstores.
They do.
Often. Yeah. And they talk about that kind of example in the article. Like a kid, they gave their allowance. And actually, this kid got a debit card from GoHenry. And so she feels like, there's unlimited money. And so she treated her friends all to shakes somewhere or candy. And but her dad can see what she's spending the money on and what's going on. And so he can sit down and have a talk with her about, hey, you might want to pace yourself. And so she's seeing the pain of that spending. And according to the article, she's getting much better and more responsible and feeling that this is actually money flying out. It's not just unlimited from mom and dad, which is a great thing for a kid to learn early, right?
There's also a lot of research that indicates that people are more willing. People spend more money on a card than using cash.
Oh, for sure.
Because there's less.
You don't feel the pain.
You don't feel the pain. It's just sort of this faceless, seamless transaction.
You're talking about my whole 20s.
Yeah. Swipe, 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 baby. Swipe, insert.
That's interesting. They mentioned that there's a study from the University of Michigan that children as young as 5 have emotional reactions to money, and that affects the way that they spend money. So in the experiment, the kids who were distressed at the idea of spending money were more likely to save, and if they weren't distressed, they tended to spend more. So they could see that emotional response to spending and saving. And then you can kind of train appropriately. No way around spending time and talking to your kids, but at least you can observe the behavior and work together on more responsible and long-term thinking in terms of their money. Which again, it's a tough thing to learn to teach your kids. You don't see if you give a 20, let's say, you don't see what they spend it on, and But this way you can work together and they can see it on an app.
I have two words for you, Cabo, Mexico. When I was in college, I ended up getting a credit card from, I think, Citibank or something. Because they happen to have a booth and they give away a free T-shirt or like a free Frisbee or whatever on campus.
Yeah.
So, of course, I got the credit card, racked up a bunch of debt, but I went to Mexico, which is fun, on spring break.
You can't replace those experiences.
You cannot replace that, yeah. But
I mean, that wouldn't be the same when you're 60. You have to experience that in your teens.
I had to do it, yeah, in my late teens, early 20s. But I certainly did pay for that, I think, even after school finished. Yeah. I was still paying for that many, many years later. So I didn't know the value of financial literacy and financial health until I got in trouble.
And the long-term impact, sure.
But I'm happy to say that now I have a perfect FICO score.
Well, you think, yeah. Wait. Yeah, it's great. They go over some of the apps that they give you a little synopsis on some of the apps to help you do this, including Greenlight, GoHenry, Rooster Money, Busy Kid, and FamZoo. So if you have some kids at home, you want to teach them how to manage their money, and that's going to stick with them for the long term. So it's a great thing to teach. Check out the article and you can check out the apps, and good luck managing out there.
Yeah. Good luck to all your
Kids are pretty easy to manage, right?
Kids are super easy.
Money's easy to manage compared to kids.
Money is easy. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now let's get into something that's not quite money. It's not an asset. It's not a commodity. What is it?
It's certainly not a security, or is it? Ooh, the plot thickens. So as of today, we're recording this on Tuesday, June 4th. And as of today, the SEC has sued Kick for $100 million. So Kick is a messaging service. It was kind of popular, I think, on college campuses, maybe 3-4 years ago, so these things kind of wax and wane with the times. But it was a messaging service that had an ICO in 2017. So they raised $100 million for their product, for their cryptocurrency called KIN, K-I-N. Of course, they didn't disclose whether this was a security. They implied in their documents that users would benefit from getting in on this early and would actually make money, which never happens with these things. We promise. Yeah, absolutely. And like 99.9% of all ICOs, it was deemed to be a scam. So now the SEC is going after them. Apparently, they are ready for a fight. They want to go to court because their argument is that the SEC was vague and ambiguous in their language.
See, that's the interesting part. They actually want a court case with the SEC.
They do. I think they want to really settle this down. So they're raising more funds from their users to go fight the legal battle, which is also very fascinating.
That reminds me of Theranos. Didn't most of the Theranos money go to legal expenses and her mansion?
I think in the case of Theranos, they definitely gave a small equity stake to David Boyce and his law firm as part of defending the company. So he had a personal stake in making sure that they were successful in all their million.
But it turned out it was like some tens of million. So I'm comparing KIN and this Kick thing to Theranos.
What I like about this, beyond the fact that the SEC is getting more aggressive in their enforcement and they're taking people to court, is that this really speaks to I think last week we talked about, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about how Facebook is getting into the whole cryptocurrency game as well.
And they're talking to the SEC ahead of time.
Ahead of time, exactly. More adults in the room. But of course, you see all these payment / messaging providers across other parts of the world, like Line in Japan or KakaoTalk in Korea or Alipay in China. Twitter is, of course, looking at this as well. So this speaks to the natural confluence of messaging and peer-to-peer payments.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to arise out of that. Interesting. So hopefully nobody lands in jail unless they were committing fraud. Are they on the right side of this?
Is KIN on the... Yeah. That is a great question. I am overall very skeptical about any ICOs. I think they're all scams. But I think Cake is maybe... I know that their business was declining significantly. It's always been a money-losing entity since they started. So this is just kind of a desperate attempt for them to get some cash into the house. But overall, I do think we need more clear guidelines from the SEC and the other regulators, FINRA, all of them. But I don't know that I'm siding with Kick on this one. I think that if you are engaged in an ICO and it's supposed to be a scam ICO, then for sure you should get your hand slapped.
If there's no development or...
If there's no development, if there's no actual product. And also, if you offer this in a way that makes it look like you're offering securities, which will go up in value, and they don't, because most cryptocurrencies don't, then, of course, you should get slapped down.
Yeah, for sure. All right, thanks for that. Always interesting what's going on in the world of crypto. All right, let me get started with my final bite, which is $100 million. And that's the amount that a new bank called Grasshopper Bancorp raised from investors like T. Rowe Price, Patriot Financial, and Endeavor Capital to focus on startups. And this is interesting because, Silicon Valley Bank has been the startup venture-backed startup bank for a long time. And it looks like Grasshopper is targeting that same marketplace. They opened for business in May, so very new. And it's great to see. Of course, we always want to see more competition in offerings. I wouldn't say Silicon Valley Bank's the only one, but they certainly have a strong ties within the venture capital world. And it's also nice to see a new bank getting started in the U.S. That doesn't happen very often. And it's very expensive, of course, with all the regulatory hurdles. But with $100 million, I think they'll be able to get their charter at least going. So let's see what happens with them. They have to establish all the relationships with the venture banks, venture funds, of course, to jump in.
This seems like a very tough market to get into because a lot of the, if you look at the sort of the funnel through which most startups go through, they usually go through some sort of accelerator or a similar program, 500 startups or Y Combinator or something. And they usually have relationships with banks. They can provide merchant services to these startups, right? Usually it's SVB or some other entity in that ilk. So I wonder how this player can get into that space, which is very, very, again, kind of, all these companies go through a funnel. So if you think of like Brex, right? I think we talked about Brex 2 weeks ago or so. And Brex, their whole model is that they provide credit card services to startups going through Y Combinator, which is kind of like shooting fish in the barrel. It's a very easy process. Yeah. It's a very easy customer.
Oh, so you're saying building up those connections and
that may be more difficult, especially when you have to dislodge a player as entrenched in the space. SVB.
And if the venture funds already have a relationship with Silicon Valley Bank, they already know each other. They already know what the plan is for companies that they're funding. But I also feel like there's so many companies getting funded and there's so much money going into startups that it's a pretty wide open market. I mean, a pretty wide market, I should say. And there probably is enough room for another, good-sized, medium-sized bank.
So there's plenty of pie to be had.
I think there's plenty of pie, yeah. So good luck to them. Like I said, more competition, the better.
Speaking of competition, my number is $999. It's a number that's been
bandied about. Oh, I would never spend that amount on anything.
On anything, right?
$999?
That is so much money. That's a new iPhone. It is, but it's not a lot of money for Apple, which famously, they've been getting roasted on this. Deservedly so, I think. So Apple had their WWDC yesterday on Monday, as we recorded on Tuesday, and they're selling a Mac Pro for $6,000. However,
okay,
if you want to buy
pro focused,
it's very, very pro focused. Yeah. If you want to buy the stand to actually stand up the monitor, you have to shell out.
Well, the monitor is $5,000.
Right, and then the stand is $1,000 as well, which is just utterly ridiculous, and is not included.
Not included. So you just get the screen for $5,000.
Right,
and then you hold it in your hands to use it.
You say, "I am a sucker for paying this much money for this." I get the argument that of course, if you're going to buy a Mac Pro, it's unlikely to be for like me, like a home artist. It'll be for maybe a design firm or some sort of agency, right? They have the funding to drop $6,000 on a monitor, but it's still a very shady, very on
shady
Apple
feeling. Yeah,
it's an on Apple like pricing practice to unbundle the monitor and the stand and charge users $1,000. Just put it together.
Yeah, I
charge
saw
me
the
$6
announcement.
For it.
They said
boom.
So many people have their own custom uses for it, and already have Visa, which also the Visa, the connection so that you can connect it to that industry standard for monitors.
Right.
I think that's $250.
It's $200.
$200. Yeah. Oh, it's only $200.
Only $200, yeah.
So that should be included probably. If you're not going to include the stand,
then at least,
include the connector.
Give me the cheaper stand. Things. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
What's funny is that this is on YouTube now. You can go find it. But if you go online, you can find them. You can click on the moment at which the announcement was made, and
I heard that.
You can hear the boos from the audience.
I heard that. So there was great. Like a shock when he mentioned $999 for the stand.
$1,000 just for the stand.
That is fun.
And of course, the guy had scurried off the stage.
The guy, he took a look. He did a double take and looked at the crowd because he was expecting applause or something throughout the whole thing.
Right.
And then a little bit of negative, and then he kind of looked at the crowd just for a second and then recovered.
And then said,
It was kind of fun.
And now I got to get off the stage. And it's funny because this happened in a room full of Apple acolytes, right? People who cover Apple for a living, their fanboys, the press.
Yeah, right.
And it's still getting this
negative reaction. Yeah, and there was applause generally, at these things. So.
Right, a little gentle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was funny to watch. And so the tie-in to fintechs is that don't buy this if you're, or don't tell your investors you bought this.
Don't let your engineering crew sucker you into buying a $6,000 monitor.
So the lesson out of all this is buy your own stand from a third party for much, much less.
Much cheaper. Save yourself some money. There's some fintech for you.
Yeah,
financial sense.
There you go. Financial advice. Don't buy this stand. All right, that's it for this week on the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news, and thanks for listening.
Bye for now.